Among students today, the opportunities for texting and social media have made forming real, authentic human relationships a lot more complicated. Here's Shelby Abbott.
I always like to tell the students that I talk to that social media, texting, your phones should never be a substitute for relationships. They should be a springboard for relationships into something deeper. No matter how quote-unquote weird you might seem because you don't use your phone in the way that other people do, people will eventually look at that and go, there's just something remarkably attractive about that.
This is Family Life Today for Tuesday, July 14th. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. You'll find us online at familylifetoday.com. How can moms and dads and friends help high school and college age students and young adults deal with the complexities of dating in the 21st century? We're going to talk more about that today. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. Marianne was telling me the other day about a college professor, and one of her assignments to her freshmen is you have to have a date. So in the next 2 weeks, you have to have a date. These are the rules. It has to be with one person only. So it's you and one other person. It has to last at least 90 minutes long. The initiation has to happen face-to-face. And it has to be with somebody that you have some sense of interest in. And the professor was going, these kids lack this simple basic skill that is going to be determinative for what the next 4 years of their life is going to look like. And the kids are like, what do you do? They're going to the library to check out books like I Am a Tool to help with your dating life to figure out how do I do this? Because they don't know how to ask a girl out on a date.
And I tell you what, I didn't either when I was growing up, but I had to figure it out. There was no social media. There was a phone that was plugged into the wall with a long cord on it. And I can remember some of the scariest moments of my life, which now I know were great maturing moments. We're dialing, tick, 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 and sweating and making that request. That's a grow-up moment.
Do you remember Dave asking you out?
Yes. It was pretty fantastic,
it
actually.
Was?
Yes. I can remember hearing his voice on the phone thinking, what? Dave Wilson is calling me? But he acted super cool. You know, I didn't know there were any nerves in the situation.
So did he say, do you want to get together and hang out, or do you remember?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't say hang out.
What did you say? Do you remember?
I said, would you like to go out on a date?
Nice.
That's what we called it back in the 60s.
We weren't in the 60s.
It was the 70s.
Well, it's interesting because I remember talking to our sons about this and talking to them about asking girls out on a then date.
Yeah.
And they were right on that border of if it's called a date, are you just hanging out? A lot of it was in groups. But I remember Dave and I encouraging them, like, you should call this girl and ask her out. And, you know, them being like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And so Cody, our youngest son, called his now wife, Jenna, and asked her to go on a date. And she was younger, but they had this date. They sat down and ate dinner at a restaurant.
That I paid for.
Yes, I think you did.
I do remember that.
And then he would—
Not anymore, but
every time he was with her, he'd open the car door, open the door for her, and she went home. We found this out later. But her mom asked her, hey, how was your date with Cody Wilson? And she said, he was so weird. Like, he asked me on an actual date, and he kept opening doors for me, and it felt really weird to her because no one had ever done that with her.
Well, we've got Shelby Abbott joining us again on Family Life Today. Shelby, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You've heard stories like this over and over again. Mm-hmm. You've been involved with CREW for the last 20 years, working with high school and college age students. You've written a book about relationships, about dating, called I Am a Tool to Help with Your Dating Life. And the I Am a Tool is kind of that, like, you know, I can't really help you. But you can't. This book is really helpful for young people who are like Cody Wilson was, and what's a date and how do I do this? And then girls who think that's weird when it happens.
Yeah. I explain to college students all the time that the important parts of communication between the two of you should never happen digitally. They should happen face-to-face. Now, if you're far apart from one another, the exception, I think, is video chatting of some kind or FaceTiming. But whenever I say that kind of stuff, I say, I'm not an idiot. I know what you all are thinking right now. Who in the world asks a girl out face-to-face these days? Who does that? And my answer is, ideally, you. Instead of succumbing to the cultural norms of passive digital relational interaction, why not set a new standard by valuing character and integrity and honesty and guts in a world that kind of devalues those admirable things in men? Like, why wouldn't you stand out? So Cody did that. She thought it was weird. She still married him.
Ah,
right?
That's a good point. You know?
It was so weird that it was, like, compelling. Because it can happen. It's just not an option for most guys.
You know, you go back to the dark ages when I was dating.
That's the dark ages.
I remember having a crush on a girl who was a grade ahead of me in high school, and I wanted to ask her out. I was petrified by the thought. The whole idea that I was going to ask her out and she might say no, or she might think I was weird. It was at the point where, like, I had a friend who said, she will go out with you if you ask her out. I was still scared to ask her out. What's going on with us that this fear of rejection or the fear of, I don't know that it was rejection. It was kind of like, this is so awkward. What's at the core of all of that?
Yeah, it's a level of vulnerability. In reality, that always existed back when you were dating as well. Like, it existed, and a lot of times the padding that we would put in there would be talking through another friend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, can you go tell her that I like her and I want to take her out? Then it was like notes. Like, here's this note, pass this note, check yes or no, that kind of stuff. We always want to lean on that crutch of where can we make it easier on us, because there's an element of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Now that vulnerability that exists is padded through people's phones. And it's easier to do that because it's so commonplace, because everybody has a phone. And so opting for something else, it's not an option for people, because nobody likes to be vulnerable, at least initially, when your heart is on the line, because you put yourself out there and you admit, hey, I'm interested in you, therefore I am vulnerable, and you have the option to make this a good thing in my mind, or you have the option of destroying my heart.
The risk of rejection
is just brutal. Yeah, yes. It's really, really terrifying.
I'm about to find out if you are as interested in me as I am in you.
Yeah.
And if I find out you're not, that's going to be pretty disappointing, and it's going to say, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
I think that's what's kind of behind all of it, don't you think?
Yes. Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah, and I was thinking as a preacher and a teacher, it's like you want feedback.
Yeah.
But you're afraid of it.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing.
I did stand-up comedy for 4 years.
Oh, I can't imagine.
And yeah, Jerry Seinfeld would talk about how you're getting instant feedback every single joke you tell. So you're getting like, oh, that was okay. Yeah, that was great. No, that was awful. And so you can refine your show, but you still put yourself out there. And, you've taken hits the entire time while you're up there. Some of them have been good. It's kind of like golf. You know, you hit one good swing and you're like, I think I'll come back. You get one good joke. Like, I think I could do this again.
So if a college student is listening and hears us talking about this, and later today she gets a text from a guy who was saying, hey, I was just wondering if you wanted to hang out sometime. And she's thinking, I kind of would like to hang out with him. Are you saying she ought to make him man up before she says yes to that? Or is it okay for her to just say, sure?
Well, I'm hesitant to put down blanket rules for everyone and say that this is the absolute right way that you should do this.
Right.
Because the Bible gives cues about how we are to go about living our lives. But the Bible has a whole lot of nothing to say about dating, because that's a cultural thing. But we could take principles, biblical principles, and biblical thinking to help us determine how we act today. And so the Proverbs are a great place to go for wisdom and how communication should happen. There's lots of great things that we can apply in there. I'd say if a girl gets a text message from a guy, I would respond and say, hey, have the guts to come and talk to me face to face. If the guy doesn't and he kind of ghosts you and tunes out, then you've dodged a bullet. But if he has decided to come to you and lean into the awkwardness and the social anxiety of it all, then you have a guy who is willing to learn and grow and be teachable. And He's willing to fight for you. Why is that a bad thing? Mm-hmm. He's willing to fight for you. I always tell like college students, I say, when my daughters are almost 8 and 5 right now, so I don't have to worry about this stuff right now. But when the day comes when they start dating boys, God help me. if the boy that they're interested in doesn't have the guts to walk up to my front door, knock on my front door, shake my hand and engage with me in a little chit chat about the NFL and Fast and Furious, like 14 by then, he just doesn't get to take out my daughter. It's just as simple as that.
Are you telling your daughters that now?
No, because I don't want them to know about boys in that way right now.
Help us as parents that are listening. What's the strategy? How can we enter into this world of teaching our kids to expect that kind of respect and admiration and just even walking up to the door and ringing the doorbell when our kids are like, Mom, I am never going to expect this guy to do that? How, as parents, can we communicate that to our kids?
Yeah, that's a great question, an important one. I'm a little bit hesitant to answer because I don't have kids who are of that age, so it's easy for me to say right now. Number one, I take both of my daughters out on dates now, and I'm starting that early, as quickly as possible. I want them to know how a woman should be treated when a guy takes them out. And so now we're going out for donuts and, you know, we're doing roller skating and that kind of thing. So it's no big deal right now. But I want them to expect a certain level of treatment from a guy because they've witnessed it in the way that their dad has treated them. And so what I want to instill in my girls is that they would not want to settle for a guy who is not willing to engage with them the way that I did as they were growing up. Now, I know a lot of people are like, well, it's too late for me now. I think there is grace in that, and God covers over the past mistakes. He just does. So I think it's never too late to start treating your daughters in a way where they just see the bar raised in their life. And I think that if we help our kids to understand that, number one, nobody will ever, ever, ever love them the way that Jesus loves them. Never, never. So don't ever look for the satisfaction that only Jesus can give you and another human being. So that's first and foremost, preach the gospel to your kids, that they would not only hear it and experience it, but believe it in their hearts. It would be their own thing, so that they see who Jesus is and they could pair every guy to Jesus first and then dad. And they look at that, and if it's a contrasting comparison there, then they go, nah, he's just not good enough. Or they have the guts to say, well, if you're not willing to come and meet my parents, then you're just not willing to actually fight for me in the way that I need you to fight for me. And that sounds kind of serious, maybe in high school, but like, why not? Why not raise the bar in guys' lives?
So as a dad of daughters, what age are you going to let them date?
You know, my wife and I haven't talked about that too much. What has been in the back of my brain is 16. I think 16 is a good place to start because it's in early high school. It's in a place where they're a little bit more mature. They can understand those kind of things. But I think the more important question to ask is, when are we going to give our kids phones? And that is a deeper question that I need to get into, because my oldest is in elementary school. She's in second grade. And I'll never forget when in kindergarten we went to a school function, there was these kids wandering around the hallways who are, you know, K through 5. And these fifth grade girls are pulling out their phones and looking at stuff on their phones. And I'm like, fifth grade? They've got phones already when they're fifth grade? And not just like phones, like smartphones.
Right.
They're watching YouTube. They're communicating with people. They're on Snapchat. And not to even get into all the predatorial stuff that happens out there on the internet, but do I really want my kids communicating through their phones that early? You know, the scriptures talk about if your kids ask you for bread, you don't give them a snake or a scorpion. And I think when they're asking for a phone, what they're really asking for is not a phone. They're really asking for a deeper sense of communication and belonging. So don't give them something that they're not asking
for. So that's the problem. If you don't give them that, you are cutting them out of the group. I mean, you're consigning to them social outcast status in the fifth grade.
You know, that's an interesting way of approaching stuff. I think that phones in general for emergency cases and texting for that might be a healthy way to go an end around for stuff. But especially if you have boys out there, and it's not just a boy issue, of course, it's for women as well. Pornography is streamed straight into your pocket if you have a smartphone, and you can access it at any point in time. So I think that there's some parameters that you could put down. I don't think it has to be a complete no, but there could be like, we don't go into our rooms with our phones and scroll on it all night long before we fall asleep with it in our bed.
We have friends whose high school daughter, follower Christ, they found out through social media, wasn't it, that she was drunk at a high school football game, confronted her. No, that did not happen. Teacher said, I was there. It did happen. Guess what their punishment was? They said, we're taking your phone away for a year. She went bonkers.
Yep.
The year ended. She came on our stage at our church and said, best year of my life.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. You have to be willing to go through the pain initially in order to experience the maturity. What we need to realize as older folks is looking back, and when you say, I'm going to take your phone away, it's essentially like saying to a Gen Zer or millennial, I'm cutting off your hand. Because it's not just a thing that they use. We look at it as a tool that we use to communicate with the world, to get work done. It's not that for them. It's an extension of themselves. Now, as messed up as all that is, and we're not going to get into the psychology of all that, we need to recognize that when we are communicating with our kids, what we're saying when I say I'm going to take your phone away, you're basically saying, I might as well just cut off both of your feet. Mm. Now, that's not true. We know that. And that the girl you just talked about is evidence of that.
Right.
They need to go through the pain in order to experience the way that they should rightly live, and they will fight it and fight it and fight it and fight it, but eventually they will probably thank you for it.
I think it was harder on the parents because of the fight, the everyday fight. And yet it was amazing to listen to her saying, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing that because I found Jesus and I found true life.
Well, I would just say to you as a father of a 5- and an 8-year-old, when my kids were that age, next time you're out on a date with your daughter, to say to her, you know, someday you're going to be going out on dates with other people other than daddy. And let me just tell you what that's going to look like when you get there. When you turn 16 or 17 and a young man wants to take you out, you're going to say to him, you need to talk to my daddy first.
Yeah.
And you start drafting the script for them to understand this is what it's going to be. So that when they get to 15 or 16 or 17 and a young man asks them out, they've been programmed. This is how I'm supposed to respond. They know that's normal and natural. They'll still kick against the goad, right? But they know this is not something new that dad just invented because he's scared. He's been planning on this, and he loves me. I tell you, when they're 5 or 7 or 8 and you say this to them, they smile.
That is when you start.
They love it.
Yes.
They start to imagine that and imagine some young man coming and talking to their dad. That idea thrills their heart. It won't be there when they're 16, but you plant it now. It's a great seed to plant.
And we did that with our sons, of talking about when they were younger. When you want to date a girl, we called it that, when you want to take a girl out, you'll need to talk to her dad. And these guys were petrified, you know, like, this is the dumbest thing. I'm not doing that. And yet, the girls that they married, they did ask their father's permission. And it was interesting. The dads of the daughters were shocked. Like, he's not asking to marry you. He's asking to date you, which that right there says so much. But also saying to our sons, because I would date our sons as well, and that's where they got it. When we would go to a restaurant and said, you should open the door for whoever you'll take out and for your wife someday. That's just showing love and respect. It's showing that you care and that you're protecting.
And we were thinking it was showing what your book's all about. It's a whole nother vision. It's not the culture.
Yeah.
It's above the culture. It's a vision of the way God wants you to date, this divine encouraging that you talk about. This is a beautiful definition of dating that I don't think the culture is going to give them. We need to give them that.
A divine appointment to encourage.
Yeah.
D-A-T. I like that acrostic.
We have to consider this too. Since when did Jesus ever promise a life of comfort and ease by following him? He just didn't. He promised abundant life if we follow him, but he didn't promise a life of comfort. And so we can identify with Christ in his sufferings when we suffer. And as a parent, when your teenage kids are making your life miserable, that's a form of suffering. But in the end, what does it do? It's the birthplace of character and integrity. And so it's not going to be easy at all. It's never supposed to be easy, especially with the child who you love and who you desire good things for. You want what's best for them, but they don't know what's best for them. They don't know. And so it's important that we stick to that and ask the Holy Spirit to give us guidance and grace in our failings.
You wrote this book for the young person, not for their parents.
For the college student.
Correct? Yeah. So should parents read it first? Should they just buy it and give it to their college student? Do you put it on their pillow at night and have it magically appear?
Well, that kind of stuff, that's again one of those things. I think you should read this. And then they're like, never. I'm never going to read that.
For that. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if they read it beforehand. I got nothing to hide. And I think that some parents might read this and go, this guy is completely out of touch with reality. I'm not. But again, it's a call to something different. It's a call to something because the way that it's being done now is tragic, and it's injuring a lot of young people, and let's try to get on the solution side of things.
And hopefully they'll look at it the way you titled it. It's a tool to help them, and who doesn't want a tool at the right time and the right purpose to literally change their life? What a gift.
I would really encourage parents to fall on their knees and to beg God to care for, to instruct, to guide their children, because God hears that prayer. He hears our anxiety and our angst as we're raising kids. And we feel like so many times I got on my knees and said, Jesus, I don't know what's happening, and I don't even know what I'm doing, and I need your help. And he promises to help us. He runs to us. We don't see the results of that immediately sometimes, but he's always working.
So here's what I do. I would not put it on their pillow, but
no.
I would order the book, and then I just, when it came, I wouldn't say a word. I'd just set it out somewhere, like on a coffee table or something. Just leave it there and let your teenager, because the cover, teenager's going to pick it up and say, what's this?
Yes.
Right? Where did this come from? And you go, I don't know, that came in the mail.
I would encourage parents to read it and then ask questions. Hey, what do you think dating is today? Mm. What do you think it looks like for a guy to ask you out? Or for would you ever ask a girl out? Because instead of preaching to our kids, I think to ask those questions, it really is a great conversation.
You read something in here and you go, hey, is this true?
Yes.
I mean, that's a great. So I want to read this to you. Is this true? And just see how they respond to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, thank you.
Sure.
For being with us and for talking about this.
My pleasure.
Shelby Abbott has written the book, I Am a Tool. We've got it in our Family Life Today Resource Center. You can order it from us online at familylifetoday.com or call to order. 1-800-FL-TODAY is our number. This is a great book to give to a high school or college-age student, someone you know who is in the midst of the dating years, maybe something you could interact with them about. Again, the title of the book is I Am a Tool to Help with Your Dating Life. Order online at familylifetoday.com or call to order 1-800-358-6329. It's 1-800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. You know, processing what we've talked about today, I think all of us as parents would wish that our kids would have pain-free relationships, but that's probably not going to happen. David Robbins, the president of Family Life, is here with us, and it's just part of the reality of relationships that there's going to be conflict and pain.
Especially sometimes between kids and parents. I'm listening to today, I'm kind of like, maybe we should change Family Life's parenting resources to Enter Into Suffering. You know, I think Shelby may be owned to something here. There is some suffering that comes from resisting what our kids want when we know it isn't best for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so easy when they're toddlers, and I have a toddler, but man, with my teen, it takes it to whole other levels, and I know what's coming because he's a young teen. And yet I'm challenged by today's conversation. Am I willing to suffer for my teen's good by enduring their frustration with me, like when I'm doing what Shelby talked about and taking their phone away from them? You know, we talked about today our kids needing to step up in relating to others with the ability of risk and vulnerability and to not live lives that are padded. I think the same type of risk and vulnerability is needed by us as parents. As we take steps of faith to really parent them well and to help shape their lives, we're going to have to lean in and allow God to use us in some risky ways that may seem vulnerable and trust him for things bigger than ourselves in order to form him into who he wants them to be formed into.
And no, they're not going to always like your parenting, but you've got to do what God's called you to as a parent and not make their approval the benchmark for whether you're doing it well or not.
Right? Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks. Now, tomorrow we want to talk about what moms and dads can do to help teenagers through the turbulent teen years so they come out on the other side pointed in the right direction. Jeffrey Dean joins us to talk about that. Hope you can be with us as well. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a CREW ministry. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.